Hello, good afternoon. It's 6 minutes after 12 midday. This is Manx Radio live from the Isle of Man. And the man in line in session through till 1 o'clock today, the Minister of Education, Sport and Culture, Dr. Alex Allinson, is taking your calls. Live through till then, you can text 166177, email studio at manxradio.com or call 661368 to talk to Dr. Allinson today. Well, a big portfolio, education, sport and culture. So let's away. And good afternoon. It is. Hello, Dr. Allinson.
Good afternoon, Andy, and good afternoon to all your listeners.
Okay. First of all, let's dive in now. We're a work-from-home two-parent family of children in years 5 and 9. And why public schools aren't following the lead of KWC and the Buchan in holding remote classroom lessons via Zoom, Teams or Google Meet. My son's in year 9, about to start GCSEs in September, with a high likelihood of having no lessons between March and September. Do you think education is suffering, and will these children be vulnerable in this area?
Well, that's a very good question. And actually, yes, I think children's education is suffering, unfortunately. I think that's the reality, that the schools have now been closed for 2 months. And with all the best will in the world, parents aren't teachers, and we don't expect them to be. Your listener makes a very good point about online learning. And obviously, when the restrictions on schools and the closures came in, that had to be done very, very quickly. And I think it's amplified some of the issues in terms of remote learning. Some schools have been very, very proactive and have got this up and running very quickly. Others have struggled a little bit at the start. Now, what the department has been doing is trying to give guidance and lots of advice in terms of online resources. And actually, teachers have been working together extremely well to get this better. But we still have improvements to make sure that people who are being schooled at home have the adequate resources to enable them to do that and to keep up with their education. But we also have to say that obviously isn't a full replacement of being able to go to school because of some of the social aspects of it as well.
Well, it was Kerry who jotted the note, and she said also, I wouldn't class an English lesson as opposed to saying read Act 2, Scene 3, or a math lesson as watch a YouTube clip. Is there enough tech to go around? Are students, school students, are they providing their own tech at home? And obviously, if they don't have it, how will they cope?
Yes, I mean, there's two issues there. One is about the online resources. Now, for those parents who are worried that perhaps their children need a little bit more, what I'd say to them is get in contact with your head teacher, because we need that feedback to get the services we provide for children better. There are a lot of resources out there. Sometimes people need signposting, but every child is individual, so some will need a bit more, perhaps telephone support rather than things going online. Now, in terms of the tech itself, schools have been loaning out tablets to students and have been trying to keep them up to date, as well as giving them written resources as well. What we need to do, though, is make sure that those children who perhaps don't have access to the internet are dealt with. And that's certainly something that I'm looking into from the department, because even although we're talking about weeks and months until perhaps the end of the term, we know that over the summer holidays, some of these children will want to do a little bit of extra work, want to catch up, and we need to give them the ability to do that.
What happens if this is a Fran who asks, what happens if a family doesn't have a decent Wi-Fi deal with Manx Telecom, or maybe even can't afford it? Could the government work with Manx Telecom and providers to negotiate a Wi-Fi deal for families?
Yes, I mean, that is something we're looking into. And I think, as with a lot of things, this pandemic and health emergency have amplified some of the differences in our society. There was a very interesting study published just this morning from the Institute of Fiscal Studies that said that children from better-off households are spending about 30% more time each day on educational activities. And that's partly because they've got the tech and the high-speed broadband, but also they've got a study, they've got a space in their house to use that tech. And I think what we've seen over the last 2 months is really some of this disparity showing out in terms of online provision, and we need to try to address that in a way that we can treat every child as an equal.
Are schools posting anything out? If people don't have internet at home, if they don't have tech, do schools post assignments out at all?
Some do. And what I've been amazed by and really humbled by is the way that head teachers have been going above and beyond to look after their pupils even when they're not in school. So, for instance, when I was at Henry Bloom Noble School, they were printing out resources that people could then come and collect from the school. But again, if you're having issues with those resources, if you need support, contact your head teacher, explain the problem, explain what you need, and they'll do as much as they can to try to supply that. Because at the end of the day, the teachers there are trying to teach students, whether they're in the school or at home.
Alex, this is Alex from Ramsey, coincidentally, a question for the Health Minister. If all of us are doing social distancing, washing our hands, where are the new cases coming from? Surely all the sick people are isolating or in hospital.
Again, that's one of the issues with coronavirus, is the infectivity of it. We know it can linger on certain surfaces. We know it can be very infectious if you're in close proximity of people. What's happening now, and we're only talking about one or two cases, what's happening now is when those are identified, there's very close contact tracing to try to figure out exactly how people got it. Sometimes there's no clear answer, other times there's tenuous links. And it's been very interesting that whilst we've expanded the number of people doing contact tracing, some of those have been ex-police officers because they're used to that detective work. And sometimes that's what it comes down to try to go into the minutiae of how people got an infection and where it came from. And that can be a very difficult job to track that down, contain it, and make sure it doesn't spread any further. But I think Alex is quite right. Some of these cases really are quite unusual. We knew at the start of this pandemic that it was importation of cases, particularly people coming from Italy and Spain, where they'd been on holiday, everything had broken out, they came back and then managed to spread it. But now we're trying to deal with very much on island transmission between one person and another. And often there isn't any clear link there, but all of these cases being investigated on a personal basis. And we will get there. We'll control this.
A message now and a question in from Chris, who says, it's clear from the WHO that the world's heading for a second more deadly wave of COVID-19. With this in mind, will the minister look to suspending education even more? Another year of disrupted school learning is unthinkable and will decimate children's education. So we need to look at suspending the school year. When do you think... I mean, and a two-part question, really. First of all, when is this going to end? And is there another wave of COVID-19 coming?
When is it going to end? I don't think anyone's got the answer for that. The complete threat of COVID-19 will end once we've got an effective vaccine for it and when we can eradicate it, in the same way as we eradicated smallpox and to a degree polio. Certainly in the Western world. In terms of a second wave, I know that's what people are worried about, and other people are worried about it coinciding with a flu epidemic around winter time. So that's why even now we're gearing up for flu vaccination as well, because the two together could be even worse than separately. I think in terms of suspending the schools for a year, I'm not in favour of that. We need to make sure that children's education and children's emotional and mental well-being isn't another victim of this pandemic. Now, we know that children don't seem to get the same health side effects of infection. There's actually very good evidence that they actually don't get the infection as much as adults, and they don't spread it between each other. So I think we can bring schools back in a safe, controlled, gradual way to protect the mental health and the future of our children.
Can we clarify this then? In terms of COVID-19, and I don't mean this in a derogatory way, but are children or younger people, if you like, the villain of the piece? Are they super spreaders because they can be asymptomatic and they can spread without knowing? So in that context, will going back to school be dangerous?
In answer to your question, when this started off, the only models we really had were about flu pandemics, where you're quite right, children have been seen as this sort of super spreader. With coronavirus, it's completely different. And I think that's why we had initial issues when we were bringing in restrictions, because we went for everything. There is very good evidence that children are not super spreaders, that although some of them can get the infection, as you say, they don't have the same symptoms and don't get as sick. But also there's very good evidence from various countries, including Australia and China, that children just don't get the virus full stop, that when you do mass testing of populations, the rate of infection amongst children is much lower than adults. And part of that is because of their increased immunity, particularly to upper respiratory tract infections. So I think we're dealing with something very different to people who are used to in terms of flu. And I think when we look at schools and the rate of transmission between child to child, that's incredibly low. Most of the children that have got infected, it's actually been within a household where they've caught the infection from an adult rather than spread it the other way around.
Can you say which age group will go back to school first?
The plan that we publicised in terms of the roadmap, when we talked to teachers, when we talked to educationalists, they very much felt that it was those transition years that were the most important to try to support to begin with. So that's years 2 and 6 and 10 and 12. And we're really quite keen to try to get those children back to school as soon as is safely possible and as soon as we can do within the right guidelines. However, what I would say for those people who are concerned is right at the start of this health emergency, the Department of Education did say that we'd remove the obligation to send your child to home. If you don't think it's safe, if you make that risk assessment for your own child, we will respect that. But what we will try to do is reassure you and provide all the resources you need to carry on that education at your own home.
A question in from John, who says, the question concerns our many Manx resident students who have been educated in the UK university sixth form and school, and some in Ireland as well. Once the schools and universities open up again, what's being done to consider and provide for a special student status for border control purposes so that Manx resident students can reasonably continue their studies in the UK or Ireland and return to the Isle of Man when necessary?
Yes, it's very difficult to look into the future regarding this, but the Isle of Man government will obviously be trying to prioritise those people, the resources for those people. I mean, at the moment, if a student wants to go back to the UK to carry on their studies, they're perfectly able to do so. What we have done right at the start of this health emergency, though, was to close the borders very much. And I think when you look around the world at those small countries that have been successful in controlling the epidemic, what we've seen in terms of Singapore, New Zealand and Australia is that border controls have been an intrinsic part of that. But we need to make sure that those border controls are done in the right way, they're done humanely, they're done with kindness, and also they're done on the best scientific advice. What we're already seeing is certain students have come back early, and some of those have got problems now with their possessions being left in the UK and having to vacate their digs. But I've also been contacted by a number of students doing masters in the UK who have decided to stay on there until July and complete their studies. And obviously, when we get to the point where they need to come back home to the Isle of Man, we'll be looking at ways we can do that in a safe way, both for them and the residents of the Isle of Man.
Will UK universities be opening in the new academic year?
Again, I would hope so. I really hope that we can get the university education back on track in September. Whether Freshers Week will ever be the same after this, I'm really not sure. And I know that there are some UK universities who are actually already looking at online provision in case people can't come back until after Christmas. So there's a lot of planning going on. We'll hope for the best, but plan for the worst. And so for all those people who are thinking of either starting to go to university or want to continue with their studies, keep in contact with your university. Keep in contact with the department, and we'll try to do our best to support you during what is a very difficult time for everyone.
Can we return to the subject of university students who've got possessions in premises in the UK? How do you view that situation, and what do you think is the solution?
I think there's going to be a range of different solutions. I mean, we have to remember that back in the beginning of March, people were coming home for what they thought would be an Easter break and then return, and then suddenly the world changed. We also had lots of people who had to come back at short notice because they were advised to, and they've left things behind in either halls of residence, sometimes private accommodation. And some of them are now faced with private landlords who want them to clear out. We have border controls. If they were to go across to the UK, they may not be allowed back straight away. And if they do, they would have to go into quarantine. So we need to be very careful about this. What the department have done is released the press release today asking for numbers, asking for personal details, so we can look at the problem overall and try to help and assist where we can. Now, I know some people have had problems getting packing firms and removal firms to do the work for them, but as the UK government shutdown gradually eases, some of those firms will come back online, and hopefully we'll be able to give people advice and resources to look after their possessions in the UK, either by getting them boxed and stored, or perhaps shipped back to the Isle of Man. But this week, what I'd like to say is if you or one of your family are in the situation where you've got possessions in the UK, you're in student accommodation, and you're not quite sure what to do, and you're having problems dealing with that, if you could get in contact with the department by emailing julie.keeble@gov.im. We're collating all that information so that we can sit down and actually look at the best way of trying to help with this problem.
Keeble is spelt how?
K-E-E-B-L-E.
Okay, so that's
julie.keeble@gov.im.
Gov.im. Okay. A note in from Kerry that said, will there be provisional for vulnerable asthmatic children when they return to school? Are they expected to return to school despite them being high risk?
Again, as I've said, nobody's being obliged to come back to school. With asthma in children, it's quite interesting the way that coronavirus seems to affect them. Children overall are very low risk. Children with asthma, if it's well controlled, are probably similarly low risk, but those children with quite serious asthma or other respiratory symptoms, such as cystic fibrosis, we know are vulnerable. And if any of them have had a letter to ask them to shield for 3 months, obviously we would not recommend that they come back to school. Again, that means that we're trying to then make sure that they get the resources they need to be educated at home and supported at home by their teachers. And many schools are trying to ramp up the online learning, online lessons and online resources they can provide during the next couple of weeks.
A question regarding pick-up after school. Will it be safe for grandchildren to stay with grandparents until parents pick them up after work?
With the risk assessments we've already been doing, we know that actually grandparents, most of them who are fit and healthy and well, can look after young children. Those grandparents, though, who have been seen to be vulnerable because of pre-existing medical conditions or very elderly, if they don't feel able to do this or if they've been given a letter recommending that they shield, I would suggest that they don't take part in childcare.
This is Claire who sent a message in. Now, the teachers' unions were on a work to rule before the lockdown. Therefore, they're reluctant to cooperate with the government in opening the schools. They will use this to force the government into agreeing to their demands. Are the unions stopping return to go to school?
No, they're not. I think your listener is quite right. Obviously, when I took over as minister, I came into a situation where there was some bad blood and lack of trust between the four teaching unions on the Isle of Man and also the department. And that was quite obvious. And that was something I was trying to deal with and trying to repair when the viral pandemic hit. What the unions have been doing is being actively involved with the department. We've been sharing best practice. They've been sharing things from across in terms of the safeguards that are needed for children and staff. And we've been sharing our views with them as well. So certainly I would like to think that we've got a good working relationship with all the representatives of teachers and all the head teachers. And the vast majority of them want to get back into their schools and want to get back to teaching, but in a safe way for everyone. Because what I would hate to see is for us to take one step forward and then have to take two steps back if the situation deteriorated on our island. But again, there is good evidence, scientific evidence, that schools do not play a significant role in the spread of the virus within our community. And that's why, as a department, and as I think as educationalists with all the teachers, we're keen to try to get those children back into school when safe to do so to protect their education.
Ken, you're with the Minister for Education, Sport and Culture. Hello, Ken.
Good afternoon, everybody. I'm just wondering if the Isle of Man government's going to follow the UK and add the loss of smell and taste to the list of symptoms that this deadly virus is bringing about.
Thanks very much for the question, Ken. I mean, I would certainly, on the 111 helpline, we started off with just, a high fever, a new cough, the sort of flu-like symptoms. But it became quite obvious that that this virus has got some funny symptoms as well. So certainly loss of smell. And we think that's because of swelling in the olfactory lobes, which are a part of the brain to do with smell. Loss of smell, loss of taste, abdominal pains, those sort of things as well seem to be symptoms. Now, at the start of this, there was obviously a slight restriction in terms of testing for the virus because we were literally being rationed on the swabs we could get and the kits we could send back to the UK. Now that we've got our own on-island testing, what the 111 Centre have been far more keen to do is test people with any of these sort of symptoms. And certainly in terms of loss of taste and loss of smell, if they do come up, they are one of those red flags that would then trigger off a test for coronavirus.
But that taste and smell isn't on the list of symptoms that when you go on to see if you've been affected. So yeah. I don't understand. I'm not fully convinced scientific information is being correct all the time, which Beverly keeps on saying. I think we've lost the hope with scientific and medical advice.
Well, what I'd say to that, Ken, is the scientific advice has changed rapidly as we've gone through this and learnt more about the virus. Whilst the website may not be absolutely specific, what I would say is that a lot of the doctors on the 111 helpline for the last couple of weeks have been asking about loss of taste, loss of smell, when they get people concerned that they may have coronavirus. So the medical community has known about some of these rare symptoms and learnt how better to try to diagnose this illness and try to differentiate it from other viral illnesses that may be out there. But with the increased amount of testing that we now can do, hopefully we can get around some of these barriers and test and pick up far more of the infections that might be in our community. But I'm only saying might, because when you look at the number of tests we're doing and the very low number of positives, actually, I don't think there's a lot out there. It still is out there. But actually, what we've done by the actions of yourself and the rest of the community is really control the spread of this virus, suppress it, and now is the time to start adjusting some of the restrictions we brought in, which have had a damaging effect on people's employment and education.
Okay, thank you, Ken. Someone wants to go back to the unions. The teaching union's okay, but what about Unite? Doesn't Unite represent, I think, the ancillary workers as well?
Absolutely right. I mean, a lot of the conversation has been about the four teaching unions, but we're actively involved in negotiations with both Unite and Prospect and the lecturing unions at the University College Isle of Man. So, for instance, tomorrow there are various conversations taking place with Unite and Prospect, because one of the keys of getting schools back and open is things like cleaning and caretaking. If a school isn't clean and cleaned during the day, we can't get staff and children back there. So those workers, those people who keep our schools clean and open for us, actually are one of the keys to trying to get back to some sort of sense of educational normality.
Dr. Alex Allinson is with us through till 1 o'clock. This is Manx Radio. The man in line and the Minister of Education, Sport and Culture is on the line. If you want to get in touch, text 166177, email studio@manxradio.com, or call 66 13 68. 12:30 now. The Nation Station, Manx
Radio. The Man in Line with Andy Wint. Furnished by Magic Carpets.
28 minutes to one with Dr. Alex Allinson, Minister of Education, Sport and Culture, is with us. And David, hello.
Hello, Andy.
What's your question for the Minister?
Oh, good afternoon, Minister. My question is, when the schools eventually go back, and we expect that to be a phased return, do you expect the teaching unions to carry on with their industrial action that they're still engaged with?
Do I expect it? I'd hope that we can get to a decent settlement in the end for the industrial action. Of the four teaching unions, two still are taking action short of strike, but even they have been very accommodating and very cooperative in terms of getting the things done that we need to do during this health emergency. As I said, when I started taking over and became minister, one of my main jobs was to try to repair some of the relationships between teachers, the unions and the department. And I'm sure we can do that. Obviously, things like pay negotiations have to take back seat to deal with the emergency that we're dealing with. But once the state of emergency has been lifted, hopefully we can reach a settlement and then start moving forward as a profession and as a department together. So, no, I don't think that the unions are hindering the process of getting children back to school. They're being cautious. They're representing their members. But we're working together for the best of the children of the Isle of Man.
Okay, I'll just come back to on that one, Minister. You mentioned pay negotiations there. I wonder if you've seen the Treasury Freedom of Information response published last week, which blows a coach and horses through the NASUWT's claims.
I have to show my ignorance and say that, no, I haven't seen that Freedom of Information release.
Tell us all about it, David. What was it? What did it say?
Well, back in January, the NASUWT produced a pay bulletin, and they compared the tax liabilities and national insurance liabilities of teachers in the Isle of Man compared to England, and they're all on the same pay scale. According to the union, the teachers here were a lot worse off. According to the Treasury, oh no, they're not. So somebody is playing fast and loose with data. There's lies, damn lies, and tax liabilities, it seems. But, you know, you've got a complete distrust between the department and the teaching unions at the moment, and I don't think it's going to get any better when one side is saying we're really poorly off and the Treasury is saying, no, you're not, you're better off.
Yeah, David, and I was aware of that. Obviously, when I accepted the job as minister, what I'd say to you though is that this is now, the world has changed since then. The world drastically changed in March, and so when we can get to a period of time where we can sit down round the table quite physically and deal with these, I think a lot of people will be coming from a much more different and hopefully more progressive perspective.
Okay, thank you, David. Now concerning the subject of a vaccine, Dr. Allinson, is the Isle of Man in talks with the UK to secure potential vaccines in the future should the test be successful, and where would we sit in the queue?
The Isle of Man government has always really closely aligned it to the vaccination programme of the United Kingdom for a number of different reasons, including supply chains. Now, throughout the health emergency, we have been getting supplies from the United Kingdom, whether it be PPE, whether it be consumables for testing, whether it be drugs, medicines and other supplies. And when is the right word, a vaccine becomes available, we will be in line for that in the same way as any other UK region is. And we certainly have seen that during flu epidemics when we've got flu vaccinations as much as we've needed, according to the requests that we've put in. So when we get to the stage whereby a vaccine maybe becomes available, no, we won't be back of the queue. We won't be bottom of the pile. We will be up there. And certainly the various ministers involved, including Minister Ashford, are on sort of having quite regular conversations with their counterparts in the United Kingdom to make them aware of our needs and our requirements. And those sort of conversations have been very successful in terms of getting around some of the problems we've had with the NHS supply chain.
Will vaccination be compulsory?
No vaccination really on the Isle of Man or in the United Kingdom has ever been compulsory. I know people have had conversations about this in the past when we've dealt with things like measles and also influenza. I think when we come to making vaccines compulsory, you need to be very careful about that. But I'd like to see if we get a vaccine that's safe, that people will really embrace that, not only to protect themselves, but also to protect their community and make sure that we can once and for all banish coronavirus from our island. But I'd have to say, even the optimist in me says that that's a long way off. And what we need to do now is actually look at how we operate socially, employ social distance, employ decent hygiene, but try to get back to a more sustainable way of living to get us through what may be more of a marathon than a sprint.
Could you ask that optimist inside you how far is a way off?
Most of the scientists who look at vaccine developments would say it's normally about 12 to 18 months from start to finish. What we've seen, though, is for the first time in many years, really good international cooperation, which goes above and beyond the private financial demands of pharmaceutical companies. You've now got around about 20 or 30 different vaccines being developed and tested worldwide, and people are sharing the information on that. They've got open source data in terms of some of the RNA details and developing vaccines. So I would like to say that that I'm fairly optimistic that we should have a vaccine after Christmas. One of the problems with coronavirus, though, in the same ways we've spent decades trying to find a cure for the common cold, it is that sort of virus. It can change. It can be quite canny. And so I don't think we can just sort of suspend ourselves while we wait for the vaccine. We need to crack on. We need to do the contact tracing, the testing, and the social distancing to get us through this period, to allow us to continue functioning as an island until we get a vaccine, which will eventually, hopefully, be able to get us back to normality.
Stephen, you're live with Dr. Allinson.
Oh, good afternoon, Andy. Good afternoon, listeners. And good afternoon, Minister.
Good afternoon.
What I'd like to ask is, given now that we know that, unfortunately, obesity does play a significant part in the outcomes for people who unfortunately contract the virus, is what importance will you give to educating young people about the need to maintain healthy bodies and healthy eating in the school curriculum, given that the Prime Minister in the UK has had a bad experience, and partly down to his own obesity. What importance do you think? Is it something that you would consider putting on the curriculum or making it an important aspect of education?
Absolutely. I mean, healthy eating and healthy exercise are incredibly important. And the Director of Public Health provided a strategy for that and looked at childhood obesity, which was and still is a real concern. I think you're right that obesity seems to be linked with worse outcomes for those people who get seriously unwell with coronavirus. We're not quite sure whether it's the obesity itself or whether it's extra things that tend to come on top of obesity, like high blood pressure or diabetes. So at the moment, there's a lot of research being done around that subject. But I completely agree with you that actually healthy eating, active travel, healthy exercise can all be really, really useful from childhood upwards. And one of the really reassuring things I've seen over the last 2 months is more and more people getting out for a walk, getting out for a bit of exercise. Bike sales have soared. People are cycling more now. And certainly when we get more and more people returning to work, we're already looking as a government at how they get to work. Do they just get back in the car? Do they just get back onto an overcrowded bus? Or do they perhaps walk or cycle more to work? And actually, by using some of the opportunities we may have as we try to unravel some of these restrictions, I think we can come out as an island in a much better place. But I completely agree with you in terms of the curriculum and actually teaching healthy diet, providing healthy food for children, but also providing that lifestyle advice about exercise is incredibly important, probably now more than ever.
Stephen, what do you
think? I wholeheartedly agree with what the Minister said. I think it's vital. And I think that if this can be taught from an early age at school, we've got a better chance of better outcomes for not just how people develop with the coronavirus, but long-term health issues as well.
OK, Stephen. So, Dr. Allinson, do you think now's the time for a sugar tax?
Oh, there's a good one. Yes, actually. I mean, the sugar tax is coming in, partly from the UK anyway. We tend to follow some of their taxation regulations. So as far as I'm concerned, it was coming in anyway. Again, the sugar tax, and we were talking about nanny states before all this starts off, the sugar tax has changed behaviour. Even just the mention of the sugar tax, suddenly you got far more sugar-free alternatives available in the supermarkets because the companies want to carry on selling it. So they're not stupid. What we are looking at, though, is I suppose a bit of a wake-up call for all of us. The reference was to Boris Johnson, and I think the fat when you're 50 suddenly came out as a new slogan. We need to sort of wake up to the way we've been living and the adaptions we need to make as individuals and as a society to get through the difficult next couple of months that we're going to have to do. And so active travel, exercising more, going out for walks, eating healthy local produce that's not mass-produced and not overly manufactured with far too much additives has to be a healthy way forward. And if we can sustain that, if some of the people who are currently cycling around with their partners or with their families, if they can continue to do that even when we have more traffic on the roads, and if they can feel safe in doing so, we'll have at least had something positive out of this dreadful time that we've had to go through.
The Isle of Man's a very sporting nation. Participation sports have always been very high until a while ago. So how do you think the Isle of Man sporting world will get it together again when this is over, Dr. Ellington?
I think they'll do it with gusto, really. What we've seen, obviously, is a complete restriction on any sporting events for a while. As the health situation has improved, we've managed to get people back out and to do things like golf, to do things like water sports, shooting, archery. There will be an announcement today, hopefully by the Chief Minister, in terms of gatherings. And once you can start getting people from different households together with social distancing, then that is a game changer. You can suddenly start having better rounds of golf. You can do other bits and pieces. So from my point of view, in terms of a minister, I'm waiting for that announcement. And then we'll be working with the various sports bodies on the Isle of Man, which I have to say have been fantastic in making the right adaptations. They've been coming to the department, telling us how they will make their sports safer during this difficult time, how they will reassure those people that they can take part in sports with other people in a safe way. We're going to have to change things quite radically, though. Obviously, some of the marathons that used to happen will have to turn into time trials. Some of the other sports will have to be far more rigorously looked at in terms of safety. But there's lots of people out there with some great ideas, great input to make sure that we can get back to a safe sporting culture on the island. And actually, those people who have been in lockdown, those people who have been looking out the window at other people, to get them involved, perhaps for the first time, in some of the wonderful sporting facilities and the wonderful clubs we have here.
A note in from Chris that says, despite the fact that people can join large queues at various shops and outlets, certain sectors have returned to work and other measures have been relaxed, so as long as everyone obeys the 2 metre rule, why on earth can't two people in golf be trusted to self-distance in what is essentially a field? So when will Isle of Man golf rules be relaxed to play in two balls rather than on your own or with a member of the household?
Yeah, I completely agree with Chris's frustration. When this started out, when this health emergency was declared, we didn't know how bad things were going to be. And so the last 2 months has been brutal for a lot of people, particularly people who were sociable. They've had to close down any of the social contacts. What we've tried to do as a government is release things in a very staged approach, look at the data that comes back in terms of the number of cases, and then move forward. So the first thing was to allow people to play golf if they came from the same household. Once we can start relaxing the restrictions on gatherings and get people from different households together in the same place with social distancing, with the right hygiene, then hopefully we can move forward, particularly in terms of sports like golf, but also other ones like tennis and cricket. There's a whole range of sports there that if you play them in the right way can be made very safe. But we need that analysis of gatherings to happen first so that people from different households are able to play the same sport at the same time.
Okay, 14 minutes to one. With Dr. Alex Allenson, between now and one, you got 14 minutes to get in touch, text, email, or give us a call. Thanks, radio.
They got your whole house in their hands. When you need scaffolding, DPM. On time and on budget, DPM. We'll beat any quote. DPM, we do it all at DPM. DPM promise to beat any like-for-like scaffolding quote by 10%. So when you need scaffolding, call the friendly, experienced DPM scaffolding team on 61-2000. T's and C's apply. We do it all at DPM.
When you need a fitting memorial or headstone for a loved one, contact Manx Memorials in Peel. This long-standing family-run Manx company offer a wide range of granite and marble headstones and memorials, along with an island-wide inscription and renovation service. Manx Memorials skilled professionals will take the time to help you choose a suitable memorial, and we're proud to say we'll beat other local quotes. Call 843 861 or email matthew@manxmemorials.co.uk.
Pacesetter, the longest established bathroom showroom on the island, for expert advice and bathroom solutions that work, with new innovations and designs, including the latest walk-in showers. From practical, accessible bathrooms for an aging generation to the ultimate in luxury, domestic or commercial. Visit Pacesetter Tile and Bathroom Showroom, Harris Terrace, Douglas, or search online for Pacesetter Douglas.
I began to struggle with the stairs, but I didn't want to leave our family home. So my daughter told me about Acorn Stairlifts and their new showroom in Douglas. I was able to try the stairlifts and find the right one for me and the home I love. They were so friendly. The whole process was hassle-free and they offered the whole package from installation to servicing. Choose the island's first choice for stairlifts. Acorn Stairlifts, South Quay, Douglas.
Call Acorn Stairlifts now on 672 414 or call into our Douglas showroom.
An urgent appeal from Isle of Man Transport to remind people to stay off the railway lines. Despite seeming quiet on the Manx Electric Railway and Isle of Man Steam Railway lines, trains and trams may be running for essential engineering purposes. Some people have started to use the lines for recreational activities, climbing over and damaging fences, creating an issue with both personal safety and livestock management. For the safety of all, please do not trespass on any of the Isle of Man Transport Railway lines.
Are you worried about your business at this difficult time? Wondering what's going to happen with payroll, tax and VAT? Then talk to Nicola Bowker & Co today. From expert advice to getting a helping hand, Nicola Bowker & Co can help and guide you. Call 861 271.
The Man in Line with Andy Wint. Furnished by Magic Carpets.
It's 11 minutes to one, live from the Isle of Man with the Minister for Education, Sport and Culture, Dr. Alex Allenson. And Patrick, you're live with the Minister.
Good afternoon, Minister.
Good afternoon, Patrick.
We'll ask a question, Minister. We have quite a lot of boxing coaches on the island. Would it be possible if we restrict districting rules, if we took them to the park for training? Would it be possible to do that? I mean, if the trainers are strict with the rules about distancing, could we not actually start the training? The boxing is falling behind now by a long way.
Yeah. In terms of boxing, obviously, we're trying to prevent that really close contact. But shadow boxing, those sort of training, fitness training, could be done once we relax the gathering rules. And I've also been approached by people who do martial arts, for instance. Same sort of thing, that you want to get the technique right without necessarily getting into the really close contact sports. So I think once we can get gatherings relaxed, we can look at those sort of sports coming back in terms of the training. One of the differences between outdoor and indoor events is the rate of infection. And I'm sorry about this because, as I said, we're trying to take gradual steps time by time. The first steps in terms of sports will be towards outdoor, because we know that people breathing and exercising outdoor with social distancing, there's far less risk of transmission. Whereas if you're in contact with a person who perhaps has COVID-19 and you're indoors, even up, you know, anything more than 15 minutes in the same household can presumably increase your risk of infection.
How badly, Pat, how badly has this affected the boxing clubs?
Well, we have a new premises going to open, you know, reasonably shortly, and we just wish to have training in the open air with distancing rules in place. We want the sport to continue rather than die a little bit. You know, we want to keep it going if we can. And the new premises are going to be fantastic. It's going to be an academy, boxing academy. And it's just a shame that we can't start the training now. But if we stick to the rules, keep the distancing, anybody breaks the rules, we'll go straight home.
Yep.
It would be good to actually get physical training going, running, exercises, shadow boxing, whatever it is, in the open air. It'd be brilliant for a weekend, you know, just like, say, Saturday or Sunday.
As you're saying, yep. Minister, everybody wants to get back to it. Again, the million-dollar question, when do you think?
Well, the Chief Minister is making an announcement today in terms of social gatherings. And I think on the back of that, hopefully we can look at what Patrick's been talking about of getting coaches and boxers together in a controlled environment with the right guidelines. Nobody goes there if they're ill, but they do it in an outdoor environment without sharing equipment. That can be as safe as possible. And hopefully we can move towards that in the near future.
You mentioned that children, young people, don't suffer from COVID-19 as much as older people. So what is Kawasaki disease, and is it a threat?
Yes, it is. Kawasaki disease is very interesting because we've been aware of it for decades, and we've had it on the island. What it is when certain children get a viral infection, it can lead to a hyperinflammatory state, and then they get changes and inflammation of blood vessels, which can affect the blood vessels around the heart. Now, each year on the Isle of Man, we only get a tiny number of cases. But what they've seen in the United Kingdom is a rise in those cases. So in the South Thames region in March and April, for over 10 days, they would normally get one or two cases in children. They suddenly got a cluster of 10 of those. And these were children becoming really quite unwell with this hyperinflammatory state. Now, what I'd say is this is still incredibly rare, and it isn't necessarily just related to coronavirus. When they analyzed these children, they had a range of different viruses. But I think what's happening is that because there's so much virus out there, people are getting more of these rare syndromes. And the main things to look out for is very high temperature, normally over 40, despite Calpol or Nurofen. Also a rash as well, children having conjunctivitis, runny noses. And what we'd say is if your child does become unwell like that with a high fever and those sort of symptoms, particularly rashes, seek medical advice at an early stage, because Kawasaki's disease, if caught early, is incredibly treatable.
And this is the one, doesn't their tongue go very red in Kawasaki as well?
It does. They get what's called a glossitis. So you have a red tongue, often cracked lips, a florid rash, very high temperature, red eyes as well. And children can become quite unwell with it. But again, it's completely treatable by using immunoglobulins. And when picked up early, and Nobles knows how to deal with this, the pediatricians there are very familiar with Kawasaki's disease, when picked up early, can be treatable without any major side effects. But if it's left too long, it can cause problems.
We've got about a minute left, Dr. Allinson. In many ways, the coronavirus, COVID-19, has wiped the slate clean in many, many ways, and certainly in education, medicine's learning all sorts of things, society and politics as well. Are you making sense of all this at the moment?
Trying to. I mean, it's a rapidly changing field. I think what has happened, though, is some of those plans that we had for health and education, such as online learning, such as dealing with people who have got digital poverty and can't get online in the first place, telemedicine, all these sort of things. In the past, we'd have had planning groups talking about them for months. Things have changed overnight. People have gone online in the course of a week, when beforehand it would have taken them a year. And what I'd like to see is those positives that we've developed, that working together, continuing, even when we've got rid of this virus from our island. We've got to get some good out of what has been a brutal time for our island, and actually seize those bits where, by people working together, we've achieved amazing things, and continue with those for the future.
Okay, we had many, many more questions, Dr. Allinson, than we could fit in, but thanks for being with us today. Very good to talk to you, and hopefully we'll talk again soon.
You're very welcome.
Thanks, Dr. Alex Allinson, Minister of Education, Sport and Culture. The next media briefing is at 4 o'clock today on Manx Radio. And The Man in Line is back tomorrow at 12 midday. If you'd like to follow up on anything, you can email maninline@manxradio.com or call 682-631. And thanks to studio producer today, Howard Kane, and thank you for calling and thank you for listening.